Okay, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to the warm-up show for Free Association. So, up until about 20 minutes ago, I didn't have anything at all for the radio show, but I've now got 20 minutes worth of material, plus potentially an episode of Tales from the Dark Side as well. Neither of which are about eugenics, which is probably a good thing. Well, could be a good thing, because it gets me out of the habit of eugenics. So I've got a piece from BitChute about Operation Mockingbird and the way the CIA influenced and blackmailed the media in the 60s and 70s. And there's no reason to think that they're not doing exactly the same thing now. They keep it to themselves probably as well. So the only way you can really tell would be to know how they operate and then look for things that match that particular pattern of operation. But this is about 20 minutes. I'm going to possibly play it this afternoon, and unless something else comes up in between. So if you hear it now, you'll probably want to skip it when it's on the radio show. But here we go. This is on... It's on BitChute and it's on Willie Alfredo's channel.
What was Operation Mockingbird? Operation Mockingbird was a secret CIA operation in which the Central Intelligence Agency infiltrated, controlled, and worked with all the major media outlets in the United States, as well as a number of other outlets abroad. The purpose of the operation was to spread pro-US and anti-communist propaganda in various forms. The CIA had infiltrated and worked with major newspapers such as the New York Times, radio stations like the Mutual Broadcasting System, television stations like CBS, American state media, and various other publications and outlets. The CIA also paid journalists and other members of the media, as well as editors of news outlets, to either produce propaganda or to publish propaganda already prepared by the CIA, as well as suppress and cover up news stories that could have been damaging to U.S. interests. Quote, among the executives who lent their cooperation to the agency were William Paley of the Columbia Broadcasting System, Henry Lewis of Time Incorporated, Arthur Hayes Sulzberger of the New York Times, Harry Bingham Sr. of the Louisville Courier-Journal, and James Copley of the Copley News Service. Other organizations which cooperated with the CIA include the American Broadcasting Company, the National Broadcasting Company, the Associated Press, United Press International, Reuters, Hearst Newspaper, Scripps Howard, Newsweek Magazine, the Mutual Broadcasting System, the Miami Herald, and the old Saturday Evening Post and New York Herald Tribune. By far the most valuable of these associations, according to CIA officials, have been with the New York Times, CBS, and Time Incorporated. CIA sources say flatly that a well-known ABC correspondent worked for the agency through 1973. A high-level CIA official says that the New York Times provided cover for about 10 CIA operatives between 1950 and 1966. The agency's special relationship with the so-called majors, major news outlets, in publishing and broadcasting enabled the CIA to post some of its most valuable operatives abroad without exposure for more than two decades. In most instances, agency files show officials at the highest levels of the CIA, usually director or deputy director, dealt personally with a single designated individual in the top management of the cooperating news organization. The aid furnished often took two forms, providing jobs and credentials, journalistic cover in agency parlance, for CIA operatives about to be posted in foreign capitals, and lending the agency the undercover services of reporters already on staff, including some of the best-known correspondents in the business. Unquote. Quote, the agency's dealings with the press began during the earliest stages of the Cold War. Alan Dulles, who became director of the CIA in 1953, sought to establish a recruiting and cover capability within America's most prestigious journalistic institutions. By operating under the guise of accredited news correspondents, Dulles believed CIA operatives abroad would be accorded a degree of access and freedom of movement unobtainable under almost any other type of cover. American publishers, like so many other corporate and institutional leaders at the time, were willing to commit the resources of their companies to the struggle against global communism. Accordingly, the traditional line separating the American press corps and government was often indistinguishable. Rarely was a news agency used to provide cover for CIA operatives abroad without the knowledge and consent of either its principal owner, publisher, or senior editor. Thus, contrary to the notion that the CIA insidiously infiltrated the journalistic community, there is ample evidence that America's leading publishers and news executives allowed themselves and their organizations to become handmaidens to the intelligence services. Unquote. Quote, CIA documents show journalists were engaged to perform tasks for the CIA with the consent of the managements of America's leading news organizations. Unquote. CIA's control of the media. The main goals of the CIA in their infiltration of the media were twofold. 1. To use journalists as spies in foreign countries, also to provide cover for CIA agents masquerading as journalists. 2. To spread anti-communist and pro-US propaganda through the media. This was done in the following ways. The CIA paid independent freelance journalists, as well as reporters employed by newspapers, to spy or write propaganda. Quote, some newspaper reporters were paid, some worked for the agency on a purely voluntary basis. Unquote. Quote, most freelancers were payrolled by the agency under standard contractual terms. Their journalistic credentials were often supplied by cooperating news organizations. Some filed news stories, others reported only for the CIA. Unquote. Talking about one newspaper piece, a CIA agent said, quote, we gave it to New York Times columnist Sulzberger as a background piece, and he gave it to the printers and put his name on it. Unquote. Several newspapers which claimed to be independent were actually funded or owned by the CIA. Quote, the agency has secretly bankrolled numerous foreign press services, periodicals, and newspapers, both English and foreign language, which provided excellent cover for CIA operatives. One such publication was the Rome Daily American, 40% of which was owned by the CIA until the 1970s. Unquote. The CIA worked with newspaper executives to utilize their newspapers for propaganda and spying purposes. Quote, there is ample evidence that America's leading publishers and news executives allowed themselves and their organizations to become handmaidens to the intelligence services. Unquote. The plot is uncovered. Information about the CIA's media control operation was first uncovered in 1967 by Rampart magazine, a small California-based progressive publication. A Rampart's article exposed how the CIA was funding a vast network of front organizations, student organizations, nonprofits, cultural associations, etc., which were allegedly independent, but in reality were CIA assets. Quote, at the end of 1966, CIA Head of Directorate of Plans Fitzgerald discovered that Rampart's, a left-wing publication, was planning to publish that the CIA had been secretly funding the National Student Association. Fitzgerald ordered Edgar Applewhite to organize a campaign against the magazine. Applewhite later told Evan Thomas for his book, The Very Best Men, quote, I had all sorts of dirty tricks to hurt their circulation and financing. The people running Rampart's were vulnerable to blackmail. We had awful things in mind, some of which were carried off, unquote. This Dirty Tricks campaign failed to stop Rampart's publishing this story in March 1967. The article, written by Sol Stern, was entitled NSA and the CIA. As well as reporting CIA funding of the National Student Association, it exposed the whole system of anti-communist front organizations in Europe, Asia, and South America, unquote. Propaganda campaign against Rampart's. The CIA launched propaganda measures against Rampart's to smear its journalists as fanatics and crazies. The CIA planted a number of stories in the news outlets that it controlled in order to attack Rampart's.
In early 1966, word reached the CIA that Rampart's was pursuing leads to its web of cultural organizations. Richard Helms, Deputy Director for Plans, immediately appointed a special assistant to pull together information on ramparts, including any evidence of subversion, and to devise proposals for counteraction. By May, Helms was feeding the White House with the inside dope on ramparts as part of a campaign to smear the magazine, its editors, and contributors. Much of the information supplied by Helms had been produced from trawling through agency records. Additional dirt was supplied courtesy of the FBI. Its journalists were dismissed as snoops, eccentrics, ventriloquists, and bearded new leftnecks who had a get-out-of-Vietnam fixation. The article bore all the hallmarks of a CIA plant. As did a Newsweekly piece of the same week, Who Really Mans the Ramparts, and an article in the Washington Star, both of which announced serious doubts about the bona fides of Ramparts, which was described as not only a muckraker, but a muckraker with a malevolent motive. The CIA did everything it could to sink Ramparts. Quote, I had all sorts of dirty tricks to hurt their circulation and financing, Deputy Inspector General Edgar Applewhite later confessed. The people running Ramparts were vulnerable to blackmail, he said. We had awful things in mind, some of which we carried off. Amazingly, given the awfulness of the CIA's intentions, Ramparts survived to tell the tale.
Of course, Ramparts was also a fairly small outlet with a limited audience, so most Americans never even heard about the discoveries made by the magazine. More revelations about Mockingbird were yet to come. The Church Committee hearings. Most of what is publicly known about Operation Mockingbird came out in the so-called Church Committee investigation in 1976. The investigation began as a result of the Watergate scandal, because opposition sections of the U.S. ruling class suspected President Nixon of using the CIA against them. This led to a series of hearings where CIA Director Colby was interviewed. Although this hearing confirmed many of the elements of Operation Mockingbird, it is considered by many to have been a very weak investigation. Initially, CIA Director Colby denied that the CIA employs agents or pays large numbers of journalists within the media.
We do not attempt to influence what they put in their U.S. journals. What they do with respect to their own journal is their business, and we do not tell them what stories to write or what subjects to cover. We do not, at this time, employ any staff members of regular U.S. general circulation journals.
The hearing's findings were that, quote, the CIA currently maintains a network of several hundred foreign individuals around the world who provide intelligence for the CIA and at times attempt to influence opinion through the use of covert propaganda. These individuals provide the CIA with direct access to a large number of newspapers and periodicals, scores of press services and news agencies, radio and television stations, commercial book publishers, and other foreign media outlets. More than a dozen United States news organizations and commercial publishing houses formerly provided cover for CIA agents abroad, unquote. However, the committee report actually minimized the CIA's role in the U.S. media. Much of the committee testimony also remained secret and was not revealed to the general public. Cover-up of Mockingbird. The Church Committee investigation did bring CIA's actions into the knowledge of the general public to a degree, but the investigation was very limited and lacking in its scope. It was only allowed to scratch the surface. Quote, during the 1976 investigation of the CIA by the Senate Intelligence Committee, chaired by Senator Frank Church, the dimensions of the agency's involvement with the press became apparent to several members of the panel, as well as to two or three investigators on the staff. But top officials of the CIA, including former directors William Colby and George Bush, persuaded the committee to restrict its inquiry into the matter and to deliberately misrepresent the actual scope of the activities in its final report. Unquote. Quote, despite the evidence of widespread CIA use of journalists, the Senate Intelligence Committee and its staff decided against questioning any of the reporters, editors, publishers, or broadcast executives whose relationships with the agency are detailed in CIA files. According to sources in the Senate and the agency, the use of journalists was one of the two areas of inquiry which the CIA went to extraordinary lengths to curtail. The other was the agency's continuing and extensive use of academics. In both instances, the sources said, former directors Colby and Bush and the CIA special counsel, Mitchell Roggeveen, were able to convince key members of the committee that full inquiry or even limited public disclosure of the dimensions of the activities would do irreparable damage to the nation's intelligence gathering apparatus, as well as to the reputations of hundreds of individuals. Unquote. Quote, the Senate committee's investigation into the use of journalists was conducted under unusually difficult conditions. Request for specific information on the use of journalists was turned down by the CIA. In a series of phone calls and meetings with CIA Director George Bush and other agency officials, the senators insisted that the committee staff be provided information about the scope of CIA press activities. Finally, Bush agreed to order a search of the files and have those records pulled, which deals with operations where journalists had been used. But the raw files could not be made available. Instead, deputies would condense the material into one-paragraph summaries. The names of journalists and of the news organizations with which they were affiliated would be omitted from the summaries. In other words, the CIA would not give them records. They would just tell them, this is what the records supposedly said. But we were never given any of the records, and the names of the journalists who were CIA operatives were not revealed. Not only did the CIA manage to restrict the investigation, it also managed to infiltrate it. Quote, some members of the church committee and staff feared that agency officials had gained control of the inquiry and that they were being hoodwinked. Quote, the agency was extremely clever about it and the committee played right into its hands, said one congressional source familiar with all aspects of the inquiry. Quote, Church and some of the other members were much more interested in making headlines than in doing serious top investigating, unquote. CIA's change of strategy. Quote, the CIA's use of journalists continued virtually unabated until 1973, when, in response to public disclosure that the agency had secretly employed American reporters, William Colby began scaling down the program. In his public statements, Colby conveyed the impression that the use of journalists had been minimal and of limited importance to the agency. Of course, this was only a lie. The use of journalists had been and continued to be very important and massive in scale. Quote, meanwhile, important CIA operatives who had been placed on the staff of some major newspapers and broadcast outlets were told to resign and become stringers or freelancers, thus enabling Colby to assure concerned editors that members of their staff were not CIA employees. Colby also feared that some valuable stringer operatives might find their covers blown if scrutiny of the agency's ties with journalists continued. Some of these individuals were reassigned to jobs on so-called proprietary publications, foreign periodicals and broadcast outlets secretly funded and staffed by the CIA. Other journalists who had signed formal contracts with the CIA, making them employees of the agency, were released from their contracts and asked to continue working under less formal arrangements, unquote. Quote, Colby, who built a reputation as one of the most skilled undercover tacticians in the CIA's history, had himself run journalists in clandestine operations before becoming director in 1973. But even he was said by his closest associates to have been disturbed at how extensively and, in his view, indiscriminately, the agency continued to use journalists at the time he took over. Too prominent, the director frequently said of some of the individuals and news organizations then working with the CIA. Others in the agency referred to their best-known journalistic assets as brand names. Quote, Colby's concern was that he might lose the resource altogether unless we became a little more careful about who we used and how we got them, explained one of the former director's deputies. The thrust of Colby's subsequent actions was to move the agency's affiliations away from the so-called majors and to concentrate them instead in smaller newspaper chains, broadcasting groups, and such specialized publications as trade journals and newsletters, unquote. In 1973, the CIA started scaling down their media infiltration due to fear of being exposed. Later, they would claim, "We only infiltrated the media before, we don't do that anymore." But in reality, they were still doing it. They were just being more careful about it. They stopped putting as many agents in newspapers or hiring newspaper employees. They switched to informal arrangements with reporters and executives and to using more freelancers. They couldn't stop their media infiltration from being investigated by the church committee, but they managed to persuade the committee to limit the investigation to a few select areas only, and thus managed to turn the committee itself into an instrument of cover-up, to the degree that some members of the committee itself feared the CIA had infiltrated it. Conclusions. The CIA actually never wanted to reveal any of this information to the public. The church committee investigation only started and was allowed to function because members of the ruling class themselves thought President Nixon was using the CIA to spy on them. It was only when a faction of the capitalist class wanted it that there was an investigation. The ordinary Americans never had any say or influence. They could have asked for an investigation or for the truth all they wanted, but they wouldn't have gotten it. When Ramparts magazine tried to expose the CIA, they were attacked viciously. A common tactic by the US security state is to admit to wrongdoings only when they can no longer be denied, and when they estimate that so much time has passed that it doesn't matter anymore. They claim, "We used to do that before, but we don't do anymore." Now, of course, in the light of the uncovered NSA spying programs, lie campaigns in the media to justify the Iraq War and the following wars, etc., we know that they absolutely still do this.
Well, I've been a journalist for about 25 years, and I was educated to lie, to manipulate people, to make propaganda, just to push for war. We live in a banana republic and not in a democratic country. We have press freedom. I was supported by the Central Intelligence Agency, by the CIA.
And there are countless other examples, too. By admitting to some wrongdoings, the security state attempts to give a false impression of honesty and fairness. We know the CIA doesn't openly admit to its crimes. The CIA attacked Ramparts magazine for telling the truth and covered up the facts in the church committee investigation, which only ended up revealing a small fraction of what was truly going on. The truth is, the US security apparatus is never punished, never has its power limited, and whenever necessary, it torpedoes all semblance of democracy. They put forth lies in the media to push the nation into war and take actions outside of the control of the parliament or of the people. When things then return to normal, they go back into hiding behind the pretense of supposedly objective and supposedly free media and of parliamentary democracy. In reality, though, the capitalist parliament is just a facade and the capitalist media only a mouthpiece for the ruling class whenever it so desires.
Okay, there you have it. That's from the Alfredo Chen, what was his name? Willie Alfredo. And the video is called Mockingbird. So I think that's probably enough for a warm-up. I'm a bit tired. I don't know why I'm tired, because I've been sleeping a lot lately. Not always during the night, though. But I have been getting plenty of sleep. And for some reason, I'm a bit tired today, so I'm going to take it easy this afternoon on the show. I'm just going to let it roll. I'll use that 20 minutes. I might use the Tales from the Dark Side that I spotted the other day. Praying Shepherd, welcome to the show. And we've got him in the room as well. Praying Shepherd's just bounced out, as people often do. So carrying on, I'm just going to wing it this afternoon, I think. I'm going to talk to the chat room, see what they want to talk about, and then we'll work it out from there, because it's easier than actually doing some research. And, because there's no need to put pressure on me, is there? There's no need for me to put any pressure on me, because this is for fun. So I'm just going to wing it and see what happens. I've got enough material. I've got an interview that I haven't played yet that I recorded about a month and a half ago. Yeah, about a month ago now. So I could use 20 minutes of that as well. And then that Mockingbird piece. And that would be enough. Or I could just play the whole interview. It's 45 minutes. It does need to be played at some point. So I might end up just doing that. I don't know. I'll work it out nearer the time. I'll know about half an hour before what I want to do. So, anyway, that's pretty much it. It's 25 minutes, a little top and tail of the video. That's enough for a warm-up show. My voice is nicely warmed up. I'm speaking nicely, and it's got a nice tone to it today. So I think it's going to be a good show. It feels like I'm capable of doing a nice kind of rounded, nicely flowing show today. So we'll see anyway. Thanks for coming in here. I appreciate it. I'm going to close this off now and just do a little bit more research on BitChute in case something else turns up. But I'm probably just going to take it easy. All right, there's somebody else just bounced out. All right, I'm going to close this up now. Thanks for coming in, man. I appreciate it.